Well, hey everyone, and welcome again to MEC through our online campus. And also, I want to say to all you moms out there again, happy Mother's Day. I hope you experience the appreciation, feel the love that you should for all that you do and all that you are. Well, you don't need me to tell you how much has changed in our lives over the last couple of months. In the midst of this global pause from the way we had been living and whatever the new normal might be when it's over, the question becomes, what do we do with this in-between time? What does God want to do with this in-between time in our lives? For many of us, we sense a very unique opportunity for a reset. Because when people get a chance to slow down, even stop, that time becomes filled very naturally with reflection, with an assessment of things. And this may be one of the most significant pauses we will ever experience in our life. We may never get anything like this again. Probably we won't get one as long as this ever again. So where right now do you feel a need for a new beginning, a reimagining of how you want to live differently and chart a different course and experience a true life reset? Well, last week, we looked at what processing a reset with our jobs might involve, which is obviously something many of us are dealing with, because when you've been laid off or furloughed or even just working at home or you've been given a new area of responsibility, it tends to make you think this way. And we looked at how the Bible would remind us that when thinking about our vocational lives, we need to go back to our foundational shape, we need to do what we are, and we need to make sure that whatever we do, it is to and for God. It was a good conversation. But that's not the only area where we might be needing a need to reset some things. One of the most significant dynamics of the pandemic and the shelter-at-home orders has been how it has reshaped how we had been doing family. Think about it. The one commodity that was hardest to come by before COVID-19 has now become the one commodity that we have the most in abundance: family time. You know, we couldn't find it before, and now we can't get away from it. In fact, it's been observed that for the first time since the 19th century, the early 19th century, many parents and kids and even grandchildren are all under the same roof almost around the clock. Now, that's an amazing thing. An enforced togetherness could deepen our relationship for years to come. It could lead to a deep sense of bonding. It could get us thinking about family and working on family and being family like never before, even if it's not because we've been thrown together, but because this time has actually thrown us apart, because that's another dynamic that's at play. There's almost like two extremes here. Either we're thrown together with our families or we're isolated from them. For example, the Brookings Institution estimates that around 60 million essential workers are still going to their jobs on the front lines, and that's affecting their families adversely. They're putting in even longer hours than usual, which means they are not only spending less time with their kids, they also have all the childcare crises that come with it. Or maybe the family is reeling from the loss of a loved one or the loss of a job, which can obviously disrupt family life and even a marriage. There's just no doubt that what we've been going through has been a terrible shock to the system for a lot of families. And when there was already a bad family situation, when there was already a troubled marriage, when there was already a challenging home life, well, I read historian and author Judith Flanders tell a reporter that in good family situations, this is fabulous. In bad family situations, the badness will be magnified. And we all know she's right. But no matter what your situation might be like, it's probably got you thinking about your family and family life like never before, good or bad in terms of the situation, but it's got you thinking about how you want family to be and you need family to be, particularly rethinking, revisioning, and reimagining what you want your family life to be like going forward. Even in the smallest of things, I've been listening and reading, and people have been saying things like that they've been forced to cook at home more. And they're already saying they hope they can stick to cooking at home often once this is over. Some parents have noted that the break from their normal routine has freed them up to play outside with their kids. And they hope they can keep finding time and making time to play outside with their kids. So whether you want to keep the good going or you get the good started, what would a family reset look like? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. And it all comes down to one thing. I thought about this and prayed about this. It became so clear to me. We just need to talk about one thing. Vision. Vision. I can honestly say that if I were to choose one thing to pass on to a young family that would make the most difference in their family life, that would be the heart of any reset, it would be vision. The idea of vision is pretty clear. Vision is a preferred sense of the future, an understanding of how you want things to be and how they're meant to be. Here's one of the funnest verses in the Bible and how it puts it. Where there is no vision, the people perish. Now, the idea here is not just vision in general, but prophetic vision, God's vision, a clear sense of what is meant to be, how God designed it to be. If that's not in place, people perish. And the literal meaning of that is that they disintegrate. There's anarchy. There's no target on the wall for how to live, think, or act. So do you have a vision for your family? I know when I first began to have a vision for what family could be like, and I've shared this in settings before when talking about all things family. It was during a sleepover at a friend's house when I was in the fifth grade. Doug and I played Little League baseball together, and I'll never forget it. When I went over to his house, I knew within like 5 minutes, this family was different. There was no fighting. There was no yelling. The siblings all got along. Nobody was kind of cloistered off in their room with the door locked. Nobody was angry at somebody else. Both parents were there, and they were going to have a family night together. I thought I was just being invited over to have some, you know, playtime with my friend. But this was their family night. I had been invited on their family night, something I found that they did every single week. They had something they called family night. And I remember thinking, you mean every week? The entire family gets together and does something as a family? What that even meant or would entail, I had no idea. Well, my friend's dad took us into the backyard to play catch, baseball, and like there was nothing else in the world on his mind, just playing with us. He was giving the whole night over to that. And then we had a meal together, and I mean the whole family sitting around a table at one time, talking and laughing and just enjoying each other. And then they got a bunch of pillows and blankets and sleeping bags, I think a beanbag chair or two, if you remember those, and put them in the back of the pickup truck. And we all went to a drive-in movie. And they backed the truck in, and then we all climbed into the back of the truck to watch the movie, all of us and the whole family together. It was so clear. They just enjoyed being with each other, and we're having a blast. And laughter spilled over, and kindness was shown, and patience reigned, and love just kind of flowed. It wasn't anybody's birthday. Nobody was trying to put on a show. It was an average, everyday, weekly family night. It was just who they were, and what they were, and what they had. And I remember, to this day, walking away from that and saying to myself, even as a fifth grade boy, I want a family like that. Someday I'm going to have a family just like that. It's going to look like that. It's going to feel like that. Well, over time, the vision kept expanding. In college, right after I gave my life to Christ, I was meeting weekly with a guy who was on staff with a campus ministry that God used to help reach me for Christ. And we would meet in the student union, and we would just have like coffee and talk about faith and books we were reading and life. And he was mentoring me spiritually, and God knows I needed it. But he wasn't just mentoring me about faith. He was adding more to my vision for family and marriage. One day when we were together, he said that he was going to have to leave early because he wanted to get home before Julie, his wife, got there. He said he wanted to. And I remember saying, okay, so, oh, you got to leave early? Okay, why? And he said, well, he wasn't going to tell me until I kind of pressed him. He said, well, I want to clean the bathtub for her. she hates to clean the bathtub. And this morning she told me she was planning on doing it because it needed to be done when she got home. So he said, I want to get there early before she does and clean the bathtub for her. I'll never forget that. It was a small, seemingly insignificant thing he said that he was going to do. But all these years later, I've never forgotten that wonderful, beautiful picture of selfless, submitted love. Oh, that's what it means to love somebody. That's what it means to serve somebody. That's what it means to be selfless. Oh. And on, the pictures kept coming and the vision kept expanding. And I remember shortly after that, a year or so after that, the church I was going to in college had this series of films, series of videos that they showed on, I think it was Sunday nights, called Focus on the Family, featuring a Christian psychologist who specialized in marriage, family, and child counseling that I'd never heard of before, some guy named James Dobson. And I'd never heard anyone talk about the dynamics of child rearing. I'd never heard anybody talk about the importance of firmly but lovingly disciplining a child in a way that shapes their character without breaking their spirit. I'd never heard anybody talk about how to love a wife at their point of greatest need and to interact with your wife in ways that builds her self-esteem instead of tearing it down. I'd never heard anybody talk about how do you protect yourself as a man from extramarital affairs. And on it went. I wasn't even married. My vision for what it meant to be a husband and father, though, was just expanding and expanding. And then after Susan and I were married, the vision kept being kind of tended to and nurtured. Both of us, we would return to the place of our honeymoon. And we've done this now for all these years. We go back every year to the place where we went on our honeymoon. And in those earliest of years, we would take these long walks together and we'd always talk about the same thing. What do we want to do in a year? Where do we want to be in a year? Where do we want to be in 5 years? Where do we want to be in 10 years? And it wasn't about materialistic things like we want to own this or buy that. It was always about what do we want our marriage to be like? What do we want our family to be like? What do we want the relationship with our children to be like at this stage or that stage? And always going over the vision for what we were trying to create together. And it would shape us and lead us and guide us. Well, you can just think of all this conversation. You can think of a vision for your family like putting together a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle. That's a lot of pieces, right? When you dump it out on the table for the first time and you start looking at all these things that you've got to assemble, there's almost no way you can do that unless you're constantly looking at what? The box cover. The picture the pieces are coming together to make. Okay, your vision for your family is the box cover for the pieces you're trying to put together. That's how critical the vision is. It's the only way you're going to make all these pieces fit or even know how they're supposed to fit. As many of you know, Susan and I had 4 children and now 10 grandchildren. Susan and I had a clear vision for our family that has guided us through what is now nearly 40 years of marriage and family. That's a fair amount of time. But we've been guided by a vision all along, a vision that came through all the formative elements of my life and her life, all the hopes and dreams we carried into our marriage, all the answers we came to when we took those long walks together, dreaming about the days to come and the family we prayed to build. And it came to a single box cover. And this box cover had 6 pictures on it that we used to put all the puzzle pieces together. And I want to share those 6 with you in the hopes that it just might stimulate your own vision for your family. Now, your vision may be different. God might prompt you in other ways, have different emphases. But maybe hearing one family's vision will open the door to whatever reset God might be calling you to make with your family, because you need a vision. But what does that look like? What does that feel like? Someone says, get a vision for your family. What does that mean? Well, let me tell you what mine and Susan's was, what mine and Susan's is, because it's not over. First, we wanted our home, and I don't put these in any particular order. We wanted our home to be a peaceful home, our family to be a peaceful family. We did not want it filled with arguing or conflict or screaming. But the peace we were after was more than just the absence of yelling or fighting. We wanted to be peaceful in terms of pace, not frantically racing here and there and filled with countless events where life was just one frenzied activity after another and racing to each event. All this doing, but not a lot of being. We wanted a peaceful, calm family life that was filled, first and foremost, with family life. Second, we wanted to have learning as a lifestyle, to have it be something organic, something natural, Susan was an education major in college. After my graduate school, I went on for my master's and my PhD, and I've been both a pastor and a professor my vocational life. My mother was a school teacher. My maternal grandmother was a school teacher. Both of those women could talk about a book like it was something good to eat. When they got finished, you just had to go read it. We loved learning. We wanted our kids to love learning and for the home to be a place of learning filled with books and ideas and conversations and educational experiences and events and travel. The third, we obviously wanted to have Christ in our family. We wanted our faith and our spirituality to be an ever-present dynamic. We wanted that fleshed out in the lives of our kids and for them to have a personal relationship with Christ, one that marked their lives. We did not want them to just have religion. We did not want them to just have churchianity or some kind of just Boy Scout morality, you know, do good kind of thing. We wanted their lives radically transformed by a dynamic relationship with the living God the way mine and Susan's had been. Well, fourth, we wanted to be a family marked by serving. Serving each other and serving other people. We just wanted this servant's heart, this servant's mentality to be who we were, thinking about other people and caring about other people, but all as an overflow for how we were serving each other as a family. Well, fifth, character mattered to us. We wanted to form our children from the inside out, or as one author put it, we wanted to shepherd their heart. To not simply raise obedient children, but to raise children who wanted to obey, to form a deep and guiding conscience within them. It's easy to get compliance. I mean, I can get compliance from a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old. It's harder to get character. Character is who they are when no one is looking. Well, finally, we wanted our family to exhibit mutual respect toward each other, to honor one another, to treat each other with love and sensitivity and courtesy and empathy, to talk and interact with each other in ways that built the other person up instead of tearing them down. Well, that was our vision. We wanted our family to be peaceful. We wanted learning as a lifestyle. We wanted Christ at the center. We wanted a culture of serving one another. We wanted to build character, and we wanted to exhibit mutual respect. What is your vision for your family? Could you net it out if someone asked you? Is it clear enough that it really does work like a target on the wall? If you've never thought about it before or spelled it out, that's the start of your reset. That's the start. You've got to get the cover of the box for your family puzzle, or you'll never put anything together. But you can't stop there. Once you have your vision, you have to then let vision inform the choices that you make. You have to use the cover of the box to actually start putting the pieces together. Again, let me tell you how this worked for us, just as an example. Because we had learning as a lifestyle in our vision, one of the things that we did is we homeschooled our kids, all four of them. We homeschooled them from kindergarten all the way up through the middle school years. Now, I know that's not for everybody. Well, these days it is for everybody. But for us, it was a purposeful, conscious choice, one that we do not regret. Now, right now, you might be thinking that whatever glimmer of interest you might have had in homeschooling has been forever extinguished by these last 2 months of actually doing it. Or as one woman posted, actually, she took soap and wrote it on her car. I saw the picture of it, and it said, it was to apparently her kids' teachers, but it said, "You lied. My kids are not a joy to have in class." Or you may be one of those who used to say, "I will not, could not ever homeschool." But now that you've had a taste of it, you're actually kind of intrigued. You're actually thinking about doing it or wondering about whether that's something that you might want to do. Either way, because this is such a unique setting in all of our lives, and I've never heard more people obviously talking about homeschooling, good, bad, or indifferent like this in my entire life, and it may never happen again. And we're talking about potential resets of our life, and so many people are thinking about this one. Can I chase a rabbit and put in a plug, a shameless plug, for prayerfully considering homeschooling as part of your reset? I believe so strongly that every parent who can homeschool should. I know not every parent can, so this isn't about piling on guilt, but it is about considering the self-sacrifice, and it is a sacrifice. Anybody who says that homeschooling isn't a sacrifice has never done it. It is a sacrifice. But doing the sacrifice for the sake of your child. Let me give you my fast seven-reason elevator pitch, okay, for homeschooling. First, it fosters family intimacy. I mean, if you're liking being together now, homeschooling keeps the family together. The older children with the younger children, full interaction, all the intimacy and all the bonding that goes with it. Second, it allows for controlled socialization with peers. People sometimes take a supposed lack of socialization as a baseball bat against homeschooling. And that was one of the things that I found to be one of its great benefits. Homeschooling fosters positive socialization because it lets you be in control of the friends your child has, opposed to them just being subject to whoever's most popular in the class or whatever the peer group is that they're thrown in with. Now, the two most important influences of your child will be the media that they're exposed to and the friends that they play with and are exposed to. This puts you in charge of both. Third, homeschooling ensures this wonderful congruency between your values and teachings and beliefs and their education. Can you imagine what it must be like for a child to hear at home that there is a God who loves them and then go to a school and have someone intimate there isn't a God that exists at all? Or at home that God was behind the creation of everything there is, and at school they say there wasn't a God involved at all in any way? Or having waited to decide to introduce your child to the world of sexuality until they are age appropriate, only to have your 7 or 8 year old come home and tell you they learned about condoms that day. Homeschooling preserves a child's childhood. Fourth, it removes the tension between the world your child lives in at school and the world they live in at home, allowing for just one world. You know, I feel sorry for children today because they're trying to survive two radically different environments with two radically different value systems. You tell them they can't see a movie or download a particular app or go to a particular party. At school, everyone is talking about the movie or seeing the movie. Everybody's using that app and everybody's planning on what to wear to that party. That creates enormous tension between you, the child, and their school world. They live in two worlds, one that is, you know, home and church, and the other one that is school and peers. Well, one's going to seduce them pretty heavily and in many cases win. And that's school and peers. And it will create resentment and tension toward home and church. Now, I know you're thinking, but that's the real world. They just better get used to it. I could not disagree more. Yes, it's the real world, but no, children are not meant to be thrown into it and fend for themselves and navigate those waters at ever increasingly early ages. That is an adult challenge. It is not fun for children. They should be stair-stepped into it as they mature. Well, fifth, it enables you to tailor the educational approach that you take with your child. As a father of four, I can tell you that all four learned differently. They learned at different rates. Most school settings are not able to individualize. They have to create a one-size-fits-all approach out of necessity. Sixth, homeschooling affords the flexibility for family time, excursions, travel, serving. Now, this may not be as important to all families as it was to ours, but because of the flexibility homeschooling gave, whenever I had a chance for one of my children to travel with me, they could. School wasn't an impediment. Whenever there was an event, an activity, a concert, a play, a festival, a lecture, anything that we felt could be beneficial, we didn't have to worry about the school calendar. My vocation over these years, Fridays have been my day off. Because of homeschooling, that could become our family day. When they were serving or internship opportunities at a church or other agencies, we could take full advantage without concern of what day of the week it might land. Well, finally, homeschooling gives you the freedom to let your child chase their individual gifts and passions. Our youngest son, Zach, was inclined toward music and the arts from the earliest of days. I mean, the earliest of days. Music and all that, it just made sense to him. We were able to tailor his education to include an abundance of music and internships with arts teams and more. And in case you didn't know, that long-haired, bearded, tattooed kid who led us in worship today is my little boy. Now a pastor of worship and chasing his vocation, and calling with ferocity. Homeschooling helped. Same thing with special interests in dance or sports or areas of study. We could just chase anything we needed to with our kids. When Susan and I look back on homeschooling our kids and how they turned out and how that experience was in retrospect, we just say, best decision ever. And they did well academically with them graduating, you know, valedictorians and going to schools like Chapel Hill with academic scholarships. But more importantly, all four walked closely with Christ. And how do they feel now about being homeschooled? Well, all four of them are homeschooling their kids. Okay, our elevator has hit our floor, so I'll get off here. But I can't help but feel that this is a time God might be using to have many of you think through what a homeschooling reset would mean for your life and for achieving your vision for your family. And I just want you to know that there may not be a lot of voices out there encouraging you, and I would love to be one of them. It isn't for everybody. Nobody should look down on people who don't homeschool, but we shouldn't look down on people who do. And we are here to support all parents with all educational choices. But that wasn't the only way our vision got fleshed out. Because of our vision for serving, we invested time into serving others together as a family and built family days around serving others for years, every week. A weekly visit to a nursing home just to serve and just to love on those people. Because of wanting peace in the home, character development, and mutual respect, we knew what to most carefully discipline our kids over. For example, we did not discipline for childish irresponsibility. We didn't discipline for spilling milk or leaving their bike out in the rain. We disciplined for willful disobedience. When we told them to do something and they said no, or if they didn't treat a sibling with love or respect. It even dictated how we spent our money and developed our budget. For us, it went into our home life, and it went into travel, and it went into education because of our vision. I've never owned a boat. I've never had more than two cars, both of them bought used. I've never been a member of a country club, and there's nothing wrong with any of that. I just spent my money differently. We have a very nice house that we love, but we've lived in the same one for over 20 years, and we're going to live in that house for another 20. Our money went into our vision. And so when we were done homeschooling and felt led to put them into school, it was a private Christian high school. Expensive? Ridiculously so. But that's where we chose for our money to go. We didn't have much in the way of nice furniture or clothes. It went to school. All of our kids have been to Europe. Most have been on overseas mission trips. They've been all over the United States, learning, growing, seeing. That's where we put our money. Our vision led us to spend our money on those things, education and travel and such. Your decisions may not mirror ours, and that's fine, but you get the point. We all have limited resources. You craft the vision, and then you let the vision inform choices. That's the way a family reset works. And if you say, well, it's too late for me, my kids are all gone, this whole conversation is you know, water under the bridge. Are you kidding me? Do you know what vision kick Susan and I are on right now with a vengeance? I mean, like steroids. The best season ever. Grandparenting. Oh my goodness. And we're having so much fun with it and so much fun dreaming about it and making decisions about our, yes, all over again, about our life, our home, our activities, our budget, in light of chasing after the vision we have for our grandchildren. And that's not all. Family isn't just kids. One of the things that I've tried to teach on over the years, whenever I do a series on family or have a chance to mentor or coach on family, everybody wants to jump to parenting and children and all those family dynamics. And I say, no. Family starts with the marriage. The marriage is family. The husband and wife, family. That's what a family, where it begins. And it will never outgrow, be stronger than that marriage. What's your vision there? And is it still expanding as the years go by? As some of you know, I served as the president of Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary for a season. And soon after my appointment to the presidency, I received a phone call inviting my wife Susan and I to a visit to spend an afternoon with Billy Graham and his wife, Ruth, at their home in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Montreat, North Carolina. Billy had been instrumental in the establishment of the school, along with Harold Ockingay and J. Howard Pugh. There was so much about that day I will never forget. Billy, using his walker, showed us around the house that Ruth had almost single-handedly built and filled with odds and ends, found at yard sales and auctions. I think there was that old diving board she found that was actually the mantle over the fireplace. He took me into his study where he had written his sermons for the Crusades that reached millions. I was touched, as so many have been before me, by his humility, his genuine grace, but even more by his, and I've told many people this, I think what touched me most was his passionate love for Ruth, who sadly passed away just a few months after that particular visit. Toward the end of our time, I remember he walked us back to the bedroom where Ruth was confined. She had gamely prepared to receive us and had actually been moved out of her bed to a nearby chair next to this low-lying bookshelf where notebooks containing books of the Bible had been prepared for her with really large oversized type so that she could read them despite her failing eyesight. Billy and Ruth talked of their nightly devotions together, how they prayed for their children and grandchildren, and how those who said that there was no romance at their age were wrong. Billy said, "We have romance through our eyes." And he was right. They did. And I gained a fresh vision of growing old and more deeply in love with my own wife as the years would go by. Well, that's your homework. Create a vision. It's the most wonderful reset that could possibly happen during this time for your family. Well, next week, we're going to look at another huge reset we're all dealing with. I mean, massive. But until then, let me pray for you. Father, thank you so much for the families that we're all in. In the scriptures, it says that you set the lonely in families. It's meant to be community. It's meant to be healthy. It's meant to be functional. It's meant to be an amazing thing. And so I pray, Father, particularly for the families that are struggling right now, where this whole lockdown, this pandemic has just put so much stress on where there was already stress. So I pray for those marriages and I pray for those families. But whether it's a difficult time or a wonderful time, a gift of all this interaction, I pray that all of us would do a fresh reset on the vision we have for our marriages and family, the vision we have for our children and our grandchildren, the vision that you would place in our heart, and just net it out and then let it be the box top cover of the jigsaw puzzle and then let it dictate what we then do and the steps that we take. And I pray that for everyone listening. In Jesus' name, amen.